This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the February 8, 2013 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pynchon. I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published today. Topics covered in this week's podcast are epilepsy, oncology, functional neurosurgery, skull base, vascular disorders, interventional neurosurgery, surgical technique, trauma, and traumatic brain injury. A prospective randomized trial of perioperative seizure prophylaxis in patients with intraparenchymal brain tumors. A clinical article by Adam Wu and colleagues. Seizures can be a devastating complication after brain tumor surgery. Consequently, many neurosurgeons give brain tumor patients prophylactic antiepileptic drugs after surgery. However, until now, no study has been done to determine if patients undergoing brain tumor surgery who have never had a seizure should routinely receive antiepileptic drugs after surgery. To address this gap in our knowledge, the authors conducted a prospective study of patients undergoing surgery for brain tumors. The patients were randomly assigned to two groups. One group of 62 patients received the drug phenytoin for 7 days after surgery, and one group of 61 patients did not. The authors found that phenytoin did not prevent seizures. The main reason for this finding was that the overall rate of seizures after brain tumor surgery was much lower than expected, even without the use of prophylactic antiepileptic drugs. Also, the number of adverse events was significantly higher in patients who received phenytoin than in those who did not. Overall, this prospective trial suggests that the routine use of prophylactic phenytoin after surgery in patients with brain tumors may not be warranted. Brain carcinoid metastases, outcomes and prognostic factors. A clinical article by Grant Mallory and co-authors. The authors were given the opportunity to perform a post-mortem examination in a patient with Moyamoya phenomenon secondary to atherosclerotic stenosis and occlusion. Although suspected by prior investigators, to the authors' knowledge, no pathologically proven case of Moyamoya collateral formation secondary to atherosclerotic disease has been published. Many of the histopathological changes in the large circle of Willis arteries were similar to those reported in patients with Moyamoya disease. The findings in this patient included intimal thickening and fibrosis with duplication of the internal elastic lamina, findings that are uncommon in atherosclerotic disease. In addition, the Moyamoya collateral vessels were characterized by both enlargement and proliferation of lenticulostriate arteries. Moyamoya disease has been defined as idiopathic bilateral arterial occlusions and the presence of Moyamoya collaterals. The author's findings support the hypothesis that Moyamoya disease is not a single entity, but rather a two-step process involving a potentially multifactorial underlying occlusive vasculopathy and then a secondary vasoproliferative response evidenced by the hypertrophy and proliferation of the striate vessels and perhaps the elastic lamina duplication. This results in Moyamoya collateral vessels in some but not all patients. Incidence of high-frequency hearing loss after microvascular decompression for hemifacial spasm. a clinical article by Ting-Ting Ying and co-workers. Hearing loss is a known complication that develops after microvascular decompression for hemifacial spasm. However, there are no studies focused on high-frequency hearing loss in patients who undergo microvascular decompression. Patients with significant high-frequency hearing loss often can have difficulty understanding speech in the presence of background noise. Drill-generated noise, which is equivalent to an amplified rock concert in front of the speakers or being close to an airplane engine, is known to cause hearing loss. The author study conducted at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center evaluated the incidence and discusses the pathogenesis of high-frequency hearing loss after microvascular decompression for hemifacial spasm. The authors concluded that drill-induced noise and transient loss of cerebrospinal fluid during microvascular decompression may impair hearing in the high-frequency ranges, both on the ipsilateral and contralateral side, after surgery. Changes in intraoperative brainstem auditory evoked potentials were not useful in predicting high-frequency hearing loss. Prospective studies focusing on decreasing intraoperative noise exposure might identify strategies to decrease high-frequency hearing loss. The results from the study will increase the awareness of bilateral high-frequency hearing loss after craniotomy in general. Stent-assisted embolization of 100 middle cerebral artery aneurysms, a clinical article by Andrew Kelly Johnson and colleagues. In this article, Dr. Demetrius Lopez shares his results in the treatment of 100 complex middle cerebral artery aneurysms with stent-assisted embolization. Stents were successfully deployed across all aneurysms. Y-configuration stenting was used in 11 cases. One patient with multiple premorbid conditions died. One patient had a major neurological event. Otherwise, clinical outcomes were excellent. While less than half of aneurysms were Raymond Class 1 on initial treatment, over 90% were completely occluded at follow-up. This impressive trend of progressive aneurysm thrombosis has been consistently demonstrated with stent-assisted embolization. There was questionable recurrence of one aneurysm. Otherwise, none recurred during long-term follow-up. Certain features of middle cerebral artery aneurysms allow safer surgical clipping compared to those in other locations. However, we must consider the hypothesis that there are features of these aneurysms that also make them quite amenable to stent-assisted embolization. Location distal to the circle of Willis may reduce concerns with perforators. Large caliber parent and daughter vessels may allow straightforward catheter access and improved stent expansion. With promising early results and the continued evolution of endovascular techniques and devices, stent-assisted embolization may become a first option for many middle cerebral artery aneurysms in the future. Decompressive craniectomy using gelatin film and future bone flap replacement. A technical note by Azim Oladunjoy and co-authors. Decompressive craniectomy plays a critical role in the management of select neurosurgical patients with severe traumatic brain injury or stroke. Subsequent cranioplasty with bone flap replacement carries a risk of injury to the underlying brain due to adhesions that can form between the musculocutaneous flap and intracranial contents. In this report, a multi-layered surgical technique is described to prevent these adhesions and facilitate bone flap replacement surgery. Data is presented from 62 consecutive adult and pediatric patients who underwent decompressive craniectomy with placement of two layers of material between the brain and dura and the overlying musculocutaneous flap. The first layer was a collagen-based dural substitute onlay graft, and the second was a gelatin film barrier onlay. This modified technique did not significantly impact operative time, blood loss, or surgical complications associated with decompressive craniectomy. They facilitated the subsequent cranioplasty surgery, which was simpler and safer to perform because there was no need for dissection and release of adhesions between the musculocutaneous flap and the brain surface and or dura. This institutional experience suggests that a multi-layered surgical technique during decompressive craniectomy can prevent adhesion formation and facilitate subsequent cranioplasty surgery. Brain carcinoid metastases, outcomes and prognostic factors. A clinical article by Grant Mallory and co-workers. Carcinoid tumors are rare and have generally been regarded as indolent lesions. While systemic disease is often incurable, patients may live years with disease. Central nervous system involvement is extremely uncommon, and few series have examined outcomes in patients with brain metastases from carcinoid tumors. The authors therefore performed a retrospective review of outcomes in 15 patients with carcinoid tumor brain metastases treated at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Primary treatment was surgery in 12 patients, stereotactic radiosurgery in 2 patients, and whole brain radiation therapy in 1 patient. Systemic disease progression occurred in 73% and was the leading cause of death. Intracranial disease recurred in 40% of patients. The median overall survival was quite poor at 19 months. Adjuvant whole brain radiation therapy correlated with a statistically significant improvement in progression-free survival. There was a similar trend toward increased survival in patients who underwent surgery, but this did not reach statistical significance. Thus, patients with metastatic carcinoid disease to the brain appear to have a worse prognosis than patients with extracranial disease alone. Although there was a trend toward increased survival with surgery combined with whole brain radiation therapy, further study is needed to establish definitive treatment recommendations. Predictors of cranioplasty complications in stroke and trauma patients. A clinical article by Brian Patrick Walcott and colleagues. In this study, the authors performed a retrospective analysis of 239 consecutive patients who underwent cranioplasty at a single high-volume academic medical center to identify potential risk factors for the development of surgical site infection and other complications. Using a logistic regression analysis, they found that patients who underwent craniectomy for stroke or those who underwent a previous reoperation were at greater risk for the development of cranioplasty infection. Other variables, such as patient age, location of the initial craniectomy, presence of an intracranial pressure monitoring device, bone flap preservation method, cranioplasty material, surgical urgency, and time interval between initial craniectomy and cranioplasty did not predict the development of a cranioplasty infection. In the intense debate over the optimal storage method, cranioplasty material, and time interval to perform a cranioplasty, this study supports the hypothesis that patient-specific factors are major components of infection risk propensity. Posterior fossa calcifying pseudoneoplasm of the central nervous system. A case report by Edward Kerr and co-authers. Calcifying pseudoneoplasms of the near axis are rare, poorly understood masses that may arise throughout the central nervous system and are usually discovered either incidentally or from the mass effect on local neural structures. Given their heavily calcified appearance, these lesions are typically diagnosed radiographically as heavily calcified meningiomas, for which conservative management with serial imaging is often used. Reports exist that document the growth of these masses on serial plain radiographs. However, interval development of aggressive behavior, such as development of edema in previously uninvolved tissue, on serial MRI has not been previously described. The authors report the first case of a posterior fossa calcifying pseudoneoplasm of the neuraxis, demonstrating interval development of peritumoral edema on serial MRI, which prompted resection of the mass. The authors' findings suggest that these lesions sometimes behave in a more aggressive manner than commonly thought, and that early operative intervention may be more prudent than conservative therapy. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook.